Hey, everybody. Our guest this episode on the Dave Podcast is the lovely and talented Juliet Miranda from the Unwritable Rant Podcast. We had some major Skype problems this episode with a bad Skype connection and a weird delay between all of us, so please excuse some of the sound quality of the episode. Before we get this episode started, we would like to wish a congratulations to our friends over at the Unwritable Rant Podcast for their recent review in the Huffington Post. Mark Hershon reviewed their podcast in the Soundcast review section, and here's a little portion of what he said. Podcastland has its well-known male monologuists of the microphone, Bill Burr, Greg Proops, and Mark Maron. Less evident are the female Soundcast hosts who can riff solo without a co-host or a guest to bounce off during an episode, which is why Juliet Miranda comes across as a refreshing difference. The author, essayist, part-time misanthrope, and enthusiastic bourbon drinker has a ballsy style in the rants she delivers, covering several topics per episode, which tend to run about 20 minutes apiece, a quick, breezy listen. There's never a sense of a rant wearing out its welcome. I agree wholeheartedly. They have a great podcast. Please go check out her show called The Unwritable Rant. And now, the Dave Podcast.
Dukes of Hazzard actually got me into trouble. This is an awesome, crazy lefty California story, but I was in kindergarten and I was drawing and I drew the General Lee and I got sent home for being a racist because I drew a Confederate flag. We're talking the 80s here. We're talking the 80s.
That's like progressive thinking in the 80s.
Yes, but this is Southern California. I remember my dad just like flabbergasted standing there and just like, he likes the Dukes of Hazzard. It's a TV show. That's the car. And they were just like, this is a racist emblem. Your son, and just like treating him like he's a racist. I don't remember too much of the content. I just remember him just like shocked, just like, but he likes the TV show. And they were like, no, he has to go home. This is unacceptable.
Well, it didn't help that you were behind your dad just shouting out, the South will rise again. The South will rise again.
I mean, you pick things up from TV. I watch Roots. I had a different idea of who the bad guy was. That's all I'm saying. And that's not racist. That's just straight up hilarious. My black friends will laugh at that.
These are the days I know, I know. These are the days I know. These are the days I know, I know. These are the days I know. Some of them are Davids,
but most of us are Daves.
They all have their own hands, but they come from different moms.
Welcome to Dave, episode 18. This week, Davy Jones of the Monkees.
We are the Daves, he knows, he knows. We are the Daves, he knows.
These are the Daves, I know, I know.
We are the Daves, he knows.
You know, these are the
Daves.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dave Podcast. I'm the Green Korean.
I'm Octopus Caveman.
So how was your week, buddy?
The week was okay. The day was terrible.
Why? What happened?
I work in schools, as you know, and I forgot earbuds today and was just basically just sitting at a high school registration collecting papers from kids.
Yeah.
And no earbuds, no podcast, nothing. I had to be subjected to the music that was being played, and they were playing it was a mix of like Britney Spears stuff and then some boy band stuff. So there's some NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and then a lot of Jonas Brothers. And the Jonas Brothers are nuts, man. Like the efforting sound in their singing bothers me. I think they're like OK singers, but they want to have like this raw quality. So they do this efforting when they sing. They're like, bleh! It's just, It's pretty horrendous. But I overheard the girl whose iPod it was and somebody else, and they were talking, and she went to another playlist, and then a teacher came over and was like, no, go back. And she was like, okay, I'll go back to my classics playlist because there's no swearing on there. That was her classics playlist, was the Jonas Brothers, Britney Spears. Yeah, dude, but it got me thinking, like, Backstreet Boys, that's, what, 20 years ago now?
You know what kind of hurts is I was looking up some Dave news for the show,
And I found some, you know, I usually try to find at least one Dave story that's somehow related to the featured Dave that we're going to do. And the news story that I found about the monkeys was in AARP.
Man, I mean, it kind of makes sense to me. Like 20 years is a long time, you know?
Yeah, it totally freaked me out that the monkeys are celebrating their 50th anniversary tour this summer. 50.
I mean, it's weird to me because of reruns, I grew up with them too, but... Man, the Jonas Brothers, I don't really dump on music that's not targeted at me. Like, I wasn't one of those dudes just like shitting on Justin Bieber and all that. And man, I mean, now I think the kid's a dick, but I wasn't dumping on him because I was like, that music's not for us. It's for little girls. Right. Like, it's weird when dudes obsess about like teeny bopper music, even if it's just to hate on it.
Right.
So, I mean, I had a sister-in-law that liked the Jonas Brothers, and it was like, oh, cute. You like your weird little stupid teenager music. Yeah. But I finally got to listen to the lyrical content, and it's fucking bananas, dude.
This whole time, when you were talking about the Jonas Brothers, I was thinking Hanson.
No. Hanson is way better.
This whole time, that's who I had in mind. The Jonas Brothers. I don't know I couldn't name one of their songs. I know there's a Nick Jonas, and I know that they don't have sex, and that makes me not like them.
But what's even weirder is I think they're obsessed with the future, because they also did the Kids of America song. We're the Kids of America. But they change it to We're the Kids of the Future? It's weird, man. And I've never had to sit and listen to that much stuff. But it was one of those things where, like, finally when, like, Toxic by Britney Spears kicked on, I was like, oh, shit, this is my jam right here.
All right. Let's bring Juliet Miranda into this and see what she thinks of the Jonas Brothers.
Hey there, guys.
How's it going?
We are excellent. How are you doing?
Doing great.
So happy to have you on.
Oh, thank you. Happy to be here.
So, right
off.
What
are y'all gigging about?
right off the bat, what are your thoughts on the Jonas Brothers?
I'm supposed to have thoughts on them? I really don't.
Doesn't everybody?
No. Why would I waste brain space on them?
We just had a 5-minute conversation about them, and the whole time I thought we were talking about Hanson.
No, Hanson is old and cool now. Everybody loves them.
Yeah, they're kind of back, right?
I saw them at Disney World. They were playing Epcot at the Food and Wine Festival. They were actually really good.
I thought you were going to say I saw them at Disney World. They were playing Goofy and Mickey and Minnie.
They may have been, and I missed it.
I work with kids. I work at a school. But yeah, I was working at a high school registration, and I was subjected to a playlist called Classics by a teenager that was the Jonas Brothers, Britney Spears, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, stuff that I wouldn't necessarily refer to as classics. But yeah, I was subjected to a lot of Jonas Brothers, and it was shocking to me how terrible it was.
Well, they're not supposed to be good. They're supposed to appeal to little girls.
That's what I've always said. I always said, like I never dumped on those groups, right? Like, even Justin Bieber, when he first started, for some reason, it was cool for like, middle-aged men to dump on him. And I thought, that's weird, you guys. Your opinion should be, I have no opinion. This is for children. Like, an adult male shouldn't have an opinion about Dora the Explorer because it's not for you. But I was subjected to it today, and it forced me to have an opinion where it was just bizarre to me. Their lyrics, it's insane to me. They have a song called The Year 3000, and the lyrics are bananas. It's something like, I've been to the year 3000. It's the same, but they live underwater. And I've seen your great-great-granddaughter, and she's doing fine. And that is the chorus to a song that was a top 10 hit.
Wow.
That's bananas to me. In a weird way, you kind of got to, like, tip your hat to them, because at least they play instruments. Like, even adult musicians don't play instruments anymore.
No, that's true. I mean, I don't know who writes their songs, though, so, you know, I can't comment too hard on them. But still, they're out there. They're doing their thing.
That's another reason, you know? They can. They claim to write their own, and they might, based on the content of their lyrics. I'm guessing they at least write their lyrics.
But I remember Britney Spears' second album came out, and my niece was a huge fan at the time. And her second album had a sticker on it that said, "Now with self-written lyrics."
That was a sticker?
Yeah.
You don't on brag the album, about things like that.
Actually, the Monkees could have had that on their second album.
No, you know what? They did. They did that's, not quite like that.
That's why it was so... Yeah, I thought it was weirdly relatable. It was almost good that I forgot my earbuds today because I would have just listened to podcasts and not subjected myself to teeny bop torture. But it seemed weirdly perfect to me because the Monkees are one of these like essentially the Beatles are too. The Beatles would have been classified as just like teenage pop music had they not taken LSD and gotten weird and I've discovered that I think in music, one of the most important things is to sound like you know what you're talking about. Like Pink Floyd doesn't know what they're talking about. They just sound like they do.
Well, the Monkees are kind of unfairly categorized like that, though. I mean, I'm a huge fan. I think later on, after some of their more poppy stuff dissipated with Michael Nesmith writing for them, they weren't quite that, you know, they tried to make themselves like the Beatles. It didn't work exactly, but...
Well, hold on. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. We got to save this talk for the featured Dave section, and where we do dive into the Monkees. We totally jumped past a really big part. How was your day? How's the week been going for you, Juliet?
The week is good. It's actually there's a lot of stuff going on. I'm prepping for an interview with Charlie Daniels on the weekend, and just the amount of information about him, and he's got hundreds of songs. It's just like he. Only thing on my brain right now.
That's a huge legend. That's incredible.
Yeah, he is. He's a music legend. He's got so much great stuff coming up right now. He's being inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame. He's got an exhibition in Nashville. So it's, I mean, I don't get nervous before interviews, but I am definitely nervous for this one just because, you know, what do I ask Charlie Daniels that he hasn't been asked before?
I could do an hour on Charlie Daniels' beard. And just no, the Charlie Daniels, Wilford Brimley look-alike thing. Like, Wilford Brimley is just Charlie Daniels with a little chin shave, right?
I'm personally impressed by his belt buckles. I think they outweigh his gear.
Right, Juliet, I can't believe you're doing this show. I just wanted to say thanks again. I love your show, and I feel like you're slumming it with us here at the Dave Show.
Oh, come on.
You have, like, a classy show. It's great,
not that
classy, amazing interview show. It's great though, and I love it. It's been one of my joys is discovering new podcasts, and I love your show, and you and Dave are the coolest. So I just wanted to say thanks again.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's nice
of you to
have
say.
You on and get to know you.
Thank you. Yeah, no, that's why I wanted to do this. What was that?
I'm just a big dummy on this show. I'm a big softy, but Chris cuts all that shit out of this show, and he just leaves in the parts where I'm a dumbass. I know my
as
place.
As long as you know your role. Yeah, no, play in position.
Well, I don't want to be the only one.
Well, I'll be the drunk one. How does that sound?
Oh, that's perfect because we need a drunk one. I'm not doing that this week.
I'm happy to do it. I'm way ahead of you.
That's how I'm going to refer to you for the rest of the show, the drunk one.
Go for it. I'll wear it with pride.
All right, should we roll into some Dave news?
Let's do it.
And now it's time for Dave's in the News.
Satanic prayer disrupted at council meeting. This is from WeAreTV.com, and they actually have a video of this. Pensacola, Florida, of all places. We have some Florida news. A satanic prayer held at a Pensacola City Council meeting was disrupted by a crowd Thursday night. Police escorted people out of the meeting. I saw a community of people come together and take a stand for what was right, explained Bruce Gully. The invocation was delivered by a member of the Satanic Temple, David Suhor, co-founder of the local chapter of the Satanic Temple, approached the podium, causing the crowd to stand and begin the Lord's Prayer. Councilman Charles Baer called order and told the crowd to be quiet or they would have to leave.
There's a Satanic Lord's Prayer?
So Dave the Satanist... stood up to give his satanic address, and the crowd in response stood up and gave the Lord's Prayer to talk over him. And one man in the audience said, "I would rather be in a room than let darkness sit here by itself," which is a really weird detail for them to use. Suhor became the invocation once the order was regained. And a councilman walked out. It was a real mess. Basically, we're still not cool with the Satanic Church as a country, and I'm super cool with that.
Hey, OC, but are Satanic you rubbing up Dave on your mic? Straight OC, it sounds like you're rubbing someone's rubbing stubble up against the mic. I'm going with you. Unless Juliet hasn't shaved her legs in a couple of days and she's kind of cleaning herself like a cat.
Because I have them up against the microphone. Yes, that's how I do it, guys. Get used to it.
I don't know if you're cleaning yourself like a cat or what, but... okay, that's better. It's gone.
My microphone is about 2 feet away from me. But yeah, so a dude tried to give a satanic prayer at a council meeting and everybody lost their shit. I'm okay with that.
I got to be okay with it, too. I don't necessarily agree with a satanic prayer, but if we're talking freedom of speech, someone wants to do it, and if you're going to invite religion into the courthouse or a council meeting, if someone gives an invocation of a Christian prayer, freedom of speech, someone wants to do a satanic prayer, have at it.
No, I would have been with the crowd of people that stood up to do the Lord's Prayer over his stupid satanic prayer.
Sure,
that's
cool, too. The
satanic church is stupid anyway. It's reactionary. I don't believe in reactionary faith.
The Satanic Church has been around for quite some time.
Yeah, but it was like invented in the 70s by like a shitty punk rock dude. Anton LaVey is not like a great guy. And any kind of reactionary thing, like I will even dump on Nietzsche because like Allsprach Zarathustra, the whole idea of the Übermensch and all of that stuff, it's just reactionary. Like people are like, oh, Nietzsche's so deep, he said God is dead. No, Nietzsche was just pissed at the Catholic Church. His entire slant on things was, I don't like the Catholic Church. I'm going to do this thing to piss them off. Nietzsche is punk rock. He's not a genius. He's just a dude who pissed off his parents, a.k.a. the Catholic Church, by going like, God is dead, man, and fucking I'm a rebel. That's all Nietzsche is. He's not a brilliant dude.
Nietzsche's main point was actually to overcome and transcend yourself, which isn't entirely reactionary. I think it's actually evolutionary.
Maybe, but the church of the self is essentially anti-church because the Christian faith is so much about selflessness and sacrifice that to say those things in the time in which he said them were it was very, very incendiary. So I think his whole slant was to be a reactionary to the Catholic Church. And I don't like this. The Church of Satan, when you hear about their meetings, it's essentially just a bunch of smart atheist dudes hanging around being dicks together and playing video games. Like it's the Church of the Self. It's not the Church
of Satan.
What's
wrong with that?
They don't do the black masses. it's just stupid to be like, hail Satan, when you're like, you're clearly not saying hail Satan. You're just trying to piss off Christians.
I think baiting Christians is kind of fun, actually. I really think that the Church of Satan is really just an organized way to, like you said, it's to be pro-self. I think there's more to it than that. It's very simplified, but I don't see anything wrong with that. I think that, you know, it in a way, it's like the evolution of the flying spaghetti monster, which is essentially the same thing. Just not quite as antagonistic.
Well, I don't think church and politics. I don't think religion should be introduced into politics. And so, if they're going to allot a certain amount of time to do the Lord's Prayer, that allows any religion, whether it be Church of Satan, Islam, Buddhism, to come up and have their say. Now, also freedom of the speech. If people want to shout them down by saying the Lord's Prayer, that's perfectly fine too. But my personal opinion is they shouldn't even be doing any kind of religion at any kind of official government function.
Exactly. There's no place for it whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, we all agree on this one. Let's see Kumbaya.
Well, Satan is good. Satan is our friend.
I was going to say.
Lord, do I got to get out the Lord's Prayer?
Oh, don't.
You might want to. You have no idea. idea what I'm capable of.
I was once Catholic here.
So was I until I got booted out.
We don't boot people out. I'll welcome you back with open arms.
Did you ever hear my bunny crucifixion story?
No.
I'm not sure that I want to.
Let's just say it was something that happened in grade school at the Catholic school I went to. And it was a reaction to the very un-Catholic behavior that people exhibited towards me. So go back and listen to that episode.
I'm praying that it was a stuffed bunny, a stuffed animal.
Oh, no. No, it was a real one.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for coming on, Juliette. We will talk to you soon. And that was our Davy Jones episode, you guys.
It was dead when I found it.
Oh, okay. You just climbed way up the ladder then. That's fine.
By the way, because Skype keeps cutting out on you and you come out cross-sounding somewhat robotic, I'm thinking God may have his hand in this episode. Or her hand. I don't want to be sexist. All right. Let's get on to the next.
Moving right along.
Yeah, let's get on to the next Dave news story. This one comes from Refinery 29 and is a tip of a hat to our friends Josh and Melissa over at the One With podcast. Here's an article that's titled, "We Bet You Didn't Know This About Friends." Of all the Friends stories, Phoebe and Mike's is perhaps the most charming. But before Mike came along, there was David, the scientist that Phoebe fell in love with before he had to move to Minsk. And the article goes on to basically say the writers originally had planned for Phoebe to end up with Dave.
Who played Dave?
Hank Azaria.
Huh. I don't remember that at all.
Yeah. Were you a big Friends fan?
No.
The drunk one? The drinking one?
Ugh, no. No, thank you.
For me, that shows like, popularity sort of peaked at a time when it was just like come home from work and drink and work on music. So I wasn't in like a heavy TV watching mode. I was just aware of it.
Yeah, it's a really good show and it still holds up today.
I caught a few in reruns and I think it's okay. I've seen a healthy dose of it. Same with Seinfeld. I wasn't like an avid Seinfeld watcher, but it's just around so much you end up picking up episodes here and there. But, you know, it's an enjoyable show, but I wouldn't consider myself a fan. It's not like MASH, where I've seen every episode multiple times. Did you have the Rachel?
I did. I totally had the Rachel.
I did, too.
It was beautiful and perfect, but that's about as close to Friends as I got.
I stand by the Rachel. What I don't stand by is the what's her name from John and Kate plus 8?
Kate Gosselin.
Yes.
Yeah, she had the volcano. Yeah,
that was a dude's haircut in the Orange County hardcore scene when I was a teenager. So it's really weird to see it adopted by middle-aged women because all of a sudden, like, it was like watching people have the Flock of Seagulls haircut. It was a very scene-specific, hardcore punk rock, like, specific haircut on a dude that somehow was now on a celebrity lady and then sort of trickled down to other ladies because of that. So that was really weird to watch that develop. I could do a whole documentary on that because that's phenomenal. You wouldn't expect like the Mohawk to end up on your mom, but that's exactly what happened with that Kate haircut.
It is one haircut that definitely needs to be abolished. And I still see women wearing it. I mean, it should have gone away like 5 years ago, but it's still here.
There's a place called the Black Mall in Orange County. Where as a teenager, it was the anti-mall. You would go there, and it was like before Hot Topic and shit was just in every mall, you would go to this place, and there'd be like a CD store. And they had a barber shop there where you could go get your fucking Kate Gosselin haircut. Like if you wanted your weird hardcore haircut, you'd go to this barber shop, and the guys that worked there were all in various Orange County hardcore bands. So it was this very like inside scene thing that these dudes can't make a living being musicians. So they make their living giving you shitty haircuts and then also be musicians.
Is that like Britney Spears shaving her head in a tattoo parlor?
I kind of stand by that. Like I thought she had gone crazy, but I was with my ex at the time and she was just like, I'll bet that feels great. Her hair's just going to grow in all healthy and fresh after all that dye. I was like, that's brilliant.
You know, I got to admit, back in the 80s,
I sported that haircut.
Are there photos?
I let one go on Twitter.
Oh, no.
Mike Driscoll and I were going back and forth, and we were talking about mullets, and I embarrassingly admitted that I sported a mullet back in the 80s. Now, mind you, this is 87 when Bowie had a mullet. So it was cool. If Bowie had it, it was cool.
Now, just keep telling yourself that.
See, I had my hair off, and I could have sworn that David Lynch was going to win because he will forever be like a hair god for me. Yeah. But Patrick Swayze won with his mullet. Patrick Swayze mullet.
That is a good mullet.
That was we had like my echelon of good hair was David Lynch, which I would have thought spot on going to win. Morrissey, a legacy of great pompadours from Morrissey. Then we had Kurt Russell, who's had many different styles, but amazing hair, including badass mullets and Overboard.
Hell yeah.
And then Swayze, who, awesome, like lion's mane mullets. Remember him on Saturday Night Live? Now people are going to think I'm gay for Swayze, but like I kind of am. Swayze's the shit. Yeah, Swayze's the best. I mean, I've always said if I was going to go gay, I'd go with my dentist because he could give me a cleaning afterwards. But number two on that list would be Patrick Swayze, circa 1990.
Good choice. Very good choice.
What a tangent.
Yeah. All right. All right. Let's keep going. And let's see if we can burn through the last two real quick. Okay.
All right. David Chang unveils new vegetarian burger that bleeds like beef. Even the most diehard carnivore would not be able to tell that the scent wafting through the air at David Chang's newcomer, Momofuku Nishi, did not come from an actual hamburger sizzling on the grill. Chang, owner of the Momofuku restaurants, expertly prepared a crowd of eager media folks what appeared to be a traditional hamburger, but it was in fact entirely vegetarian and even bled.
What exactly did it bleed?
I'm not quite sure what the blood is.
It's got to be beet juice, right?
The ingredients include water, wheat protein, coconut oil, potato protein, natural flavors, and micronutrients. And the magic ingredient is unpronounceable. Legimoglobin, which is a molecule that's found in meat and plants and discovered by the team at Impossible Foods. So that's what they say makes it look, smell, and taste like actual meat.
Huh. I don't know if that's a win if you're going to go so hardcore chemicals and science to get something that tastes like meat. Just eat a burger.
I don't either. Aren't those people supposed to be the people that want to eat organic and shit? Like, aren't the people that are vegetarian, vegans, like, not into the blood?
Yeah.
Is this to get carnivores into eating it?
I don't know, but I mean, burgers taste good, and if you do everything within moderation, you're fine. I mean, we're carnivores. I get people who want to go vegetarian or vegan. Good for them, and if this is an alternative for them, I guess that's good, but it sounds like a lot of bending over backwards and a lot of work for something that they're not necessarily fans of. I don't know. This is just weird.
It makes zero sense to me. I mean, if you're adverse to eating something that was once living, why you that? Thing that's bleeding on you. It just, that sounds weird.
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of remain neutral. I guess if people want to eat it, fine, but I don't know. Just get a burger, man.
I think it's bizarre. And I think you could take this either way. You could go with the slippery slope of science and just be like, Soylent Green as people is coming at any moment. But maybe we're able to make better foods. I have seen the studies and you do have a lower case of instances of colon cancer and things like that if you eat a vegetarian diet. So there are health benefits to eating vegetarian. Maybe this is to get dudes like me who are like, I'm not giving that up anymore, to eat it. Maybe this isn't preaching to the choir. Maybe this is smart. They're getting people who are meat eaters to eat a healthier meal, you know?
And so it's a gateway drug? Is that what it is?
Yeah. I mean, and maybe it's just, yeah, like, if I can't tell the difference, I'm not going to care.
Yeah, but for me, it's like, this is the best vegetarian meal ever cooked up in a lab.
Yeah, that's just it. I mean, the whole point of foregoing meat is to have a healthier lifestyle. And if you can't pronounce things that they're putting in your food, I don't understand how that equates healthy.
Yeah, eat the shit that grows out of the earth. You want to pull a carrot out of the ground and eat that, cool. But if once you go to the lab for vegetarianism, then I think it defeats the whole purpose.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm the opposite of that. I'm like Monsanto for president. Like bring it on. Like come on. Like the future has to happen at some point, and a lot of people would starve if it wasn't for genetically modifying things. Like essentially the plant, you know, where they take the little sections out of certain plants and graft them onto others. That's just early stages of genetically modifying things. Like the human imprint is going to have to be on this earth for us to continue to live here. So yeah, I mean, to hell with it. Let's make foods in a lab. I'm all about MSG. If you told me there was a drug and you put it in my Chinese food and it turns on all my taste buds and it makes a $3 rice bowl taste like a $12 gourmet meal or whatever, I'm all about it. MSG is amazing. Like, if you could sprinkle this wonder drug on poop and it would make me think poop was delicious, I would be stoked. And you know who else would be stoked? Dudes who have to eat bugs in the rainforest. I'm not GMO because GMO makes money, which I think most people are pro GMO because they've got some vested interest. I'm pro GMO because GMO feeds people. GMO allows us to grow corn in the middle of the African desert somehow.
I hear what you're saying, and to a limited extent, I agree with your saying. I think if you could extend crops through science, that's a good thing. I mean, science is our friend, but when you start going to the point of manufacturing beef in a petri dish, I'm against that.
I'm team people, man. If that's what it takes to get people to eat those chemicals.
Okay, so that makes me anti-people?
Yeah, you're anti-people. You're pro-organic. You're just like a weirdo lefty, and and you've solidified my vote for Trump.
I am the Green Korean.
That's right. This is the fight episode. We're debating everything. This is what happens when I don't drink. I don't turn into a dumbass, and I don't get pushed around by you.
Oh, we could go. This ain't the forum for it. You want to have this out over an octopus? What is it? Getting fucked up with Octopus Caveman? Oh, we'll talk GMOs.
Do I need to leave the room? Are you two gonna, you know, get at it?
No, you're the referee. You determine who wins at the end. Now,
I'll be passed out by the time you finish babbling.
We're just having a lover spat. You know, the hate fucking later is gonna be fantastic. Or the makeup sex.
It's the best part.
You can be referee of that too.
Only if I can take photos.
That's what Dave's there for. We need you there making the calls with like your arms up, like in the touchdown position, blowing the whistle and like roughing the passer.
Your guide to cinema etiquette from the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast.
Tip 21.
If your portable telephone rings whilst you're enjoying a film, it is a dick move to answer your telephone and speak at a normal volume during a screening. Instead, exit the cinema and return the call in private.
It should have been off anyway, fuckhead!
For more useful cinema etiquette, join Paul and Wayne on the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast at Podomatic on iTunes or your favorite podcast app.
Hey guys, I'm Adrian.
And I'm His Issues.
Wait, what?
Hey guys, I'm Adrian.
And I'm... Wait, that's not right. Hey guys, I'm Adrian.
And I'm Eileen.
Tune in to the Adrian Has Issues podcast. Each week we chat with some great people.
Including me from time to time.
Comic book creators, comedians.
Musicians and actors.
Tax collectors, Zamboni drivers.
Point is, basically anyone willing to sit down for a geeky discussion or two on all things pop culture.
Visit adrianhasissues.com where you can download and stream every episode.
Especially the ones featuring yours truly.
Visit Adrian Has Issues on Facebook and Twitter.
And subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Please leave a rating and review and tell me how amazing I am. Us.
Ah, McKenna, you're way cooler than I am anyway.
Aw, thanks, babe. Oh, and Adrian Has Issues is also a proud member of the Tangent Bound Podcast Network.
Awesome. Nice save, Brodor. Visit adrianhasissues.com.
Okay, so let's get into our featured Dave.
Here comes the feature Dave. Here comes the feature Dave.
Okay, so our feature Dave this week is Davy Jones of the Monkees. And just to set the table for everything we're going to talk about, according to Wikipedia.
Oh, the authority. Yes.
David Thomas Jones was born December 30th, 1945, and passed away February 29th, 2012, an odd leap year death. He died of a heart attack at the age of 66. He was an English singer, songwriter, musician, actor, businessman, known best as being a member of the Monkees, along with Peter Tork, Mike Nesmith, and Mickey Dolenz. He sang lead vocals on recordings, including I Want to Be Free and Daydream Believer.
First of all, what a shitty birthday, right?
December 30th?
Yeah.
No, that's a great birthday. Then you just keep partying on New Year's Eve.
No, that's one of those birthdays where as a kid, it's like, let's just save this one, this Christmas present for his birthday, and we'll call
exactly.
it a day.
Yeah, you get lost between holidays. You know, you've got New Year's and Christmas. It is. That's a black zone for birthdays.
Yeah, but as an adult, it's a great birthday. And especially if you got good parents who say, hey, here's your Christmas present and here's a birthday present.
Yeah, but how do you have a birthday party? You know, everybody's off doing family stuff. No.
Yeah, like, sorry, I'm in Minnesota this week, buddy. I'm visiting my family. That's a shitty birthday. That's the worst one. And nobody's in school. You're always off on break, so you never get to, like, get to be the big man on campus because it's your birthday, like in elementary school where it's like a big deal.
Yeah, that was me. I have a July birthday, so I never got to pass out the cupcakes at school.
Yeah, it sucks. I've got a buddy who's got a December 24th birthday. And his present every year was you get to open a present early while the other kids watch. That's the worst present ever.
Sucks.
You get what you're going to get anyway?
That's just terrible. That's just shitty parents.
I guess. That's a terrible birthday, though.
Yeah,
poor Davey. And also, we got to bring it up. Kind of out of the two Davy Joneses, Bowie's kind of the better one, right? All right, I'm going to say it. David Jones, David Bowie is the better David Jones.
Okay, I got to go with you. It's in terms of being a music legend, absolutely.
Oh, well, if you're going to put it that way, sure.
Yeah. I never knew the guy.
By the way, are we talking about Davy Jones, the pirate guy? Like, yeah, of course the music legends.
I never knew them both personally, but...
I've heard nothing but great stuff about Davy Jones, though. He's one of those guys like John Candy, where he feels like he would be a tough guy to write a biography about because he just seems like too nice of a guy.
Yeah, no drama in his life.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he had day-to-day drama, but not like biopic, like Ray drama, where it's like blind adulterer drama.
Yeah. I watched the VH1 Behind the Music earlier today about the Monkees, and that's where they bring out all the shit. He's barely in it because there is no drama in his life.
Yeah, they're like, Mickey's kind of a dick. And do you guys have a favorite Monkey? Because Mickey's mine.
Well, Davy Jones was my very first crush, but I gotta say my favorite Monkey is Michael Nesmith.
I gotta go either Davy Jones or Mickey, but I might lean towards Davy Jones just because of his Brady Bunch appearance.
Oh, that was the best.
I like that Mickey looks like he was dropped on his face as a baby.
What?
He's got serious pancake face, doesn't he?
Okay, since you're bringing up the way that he looks, let's go into his teen idol status. Juliet, you had a huge crush on him, no?
I had a huge crush on Davy Jones. I thought, well, I first saw him when I was like maybe 6 years old. And to a six-year-old, Davy Jones is perfect. You know, he was the same height as me. He was just, you know, cute and non-threatening.
What is it? Because they say in a couple of polls that I found online as the number one teen idol of all time, in one poll he came in number one, in another poll he came in number two, and that was taken just recently. What is it about Davy Jones?
Well, you know, it's funny you were saying that, you know, he's got this clean reputation, and I actually think he's one of the few, you know, teen heartthrobs, you know, Michael J. Fox aside, that was the nice guy. I think that's why girls liked him. He sang love songs. He was cute and sweet, you know, just kind of irresistible in all respects.
Well, you got to think that a teen crush is a non-sexual thing. It's exactly. Generally it's a pre-sexual thing. And the guy doesn't ooze sexuality. He's not Jim Morrison and whipping his dick out of his leather pants. He's just a sweet, funny guy on TV with a British accent. So if you look at the teen idol people, it's never like Hanson didn't ooze sexuality. They were just some cute teenage boys who seemed like nice boys. The Jonas Brothers seemed like nice boys. The Jonas Brothers was like a CD that your parents would buy and they'd be like, oh, fuck, I hope she gets a purity ring and gets way into this.
Yeah, I think it's the whole non-threatening thing. I mean, everybody gets along with it. Like you said, parents, you know, they're all right with you liking Davy Jones because, you know, what's he going to do?
Yeah. Did you ever meet him by any chance?
Well, actually, that's my story about Davy is that, you know, I had this massive crush on him for my entire life. And then when I was in my 30s, he was playing a gig near my home. So I dragged a girlfriend off with me and camped out at the backstage gate because at the time I didn't have I couldn't like get an interview with him. So I said, well, fuck it. I'm going to go hang out by the backstage door. We did this for like 3 hours. We just stood there and waited. There was a dumpster. It was disgusting. Finally, like the limo pulls up, the door opens. We're the only two girls standing there and Davy Jones walks out. He waves at us and then gets in his car and drives away.
Oh,
I swear to God, I was ready to chase after that limo and just like throw rocks at the window. I was so annoyed.
That's so.
I've got a speaking of teen idols. I've got a really good friend who's obsessed with Rick Springfield, and she happened to be just eating dinner after a Rick Springfield show with her friends, and Rick Springfield got seated at the table behind her. And as Rick Springfield came in, he kind of turned his butt to her to like, and he was saying something, grabbing his chair, getting ready to sit down. She couldn't help herself, reached over and grabbed the guy's ass and got thrown out of the restaurant.
But you know what? I got to do that to Jon Bon Jovi, only I asked permission first.
Can I grab your ass?
I did. Yeah, it was I mean, he was like my second heartthrob and I actually got to interview him legitimately. So I'm standing there, we're doing the interview. It's all wrapped up and we're getting ready to go. And I said, hey, you know, there's something I've wanted to do for a long time and I know my mother would appreciate it. Would you mind if I touch your ass? And he's looking at me like I'm out of my mind. And he goes, well, all right, what the hell? Just don't tell my wife. So he turned around. I got to cop a feel, and it was spectacular.
You know his wife is a big listener to this show. You just got him in so much trouble.
Well, this was, oh, my God. This was, I don't know, 15, 17 years ago. It was a long time.
We got to do the power ass rankings now. Because I would put Swayze near the top of that list, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Are we talking man ass or woman ass?
We're talking man ass. Oh, we're talking man ass.
Okay.
Man ass, I think you got Swayze. You probably got Springfield up there, right? We'll put John Bon Jovi on there just for you, Juliet.
Oh,
George Michael's got to go on that list. God.
Ooh, but that one's that
not
one's been
flat?
Used. That's
okay. All
right. That's a heavily used ass. I would put him in the voice power rankings, but maybe not in the ass power rankings.
All right, I see that you're an ass connoisseur.
I got to put Kurt Russell.
I am,
up
yeah.
It'll be.
I'm thinking Swayze probably wins that one. I'll tweet that poll out later.
Hey, let's do this really quick because we're losing you a little too much.
Yeah, I'm losing you too. You guys keep breaking up on me every so often.
Let's go ahead and disconnect, and then I'll recall everybody back. Yeah. We'll pick up with man ass when we come back.
Sounds good.
Hey, buddy.
Hey there.
Hello. Oh, that's much better.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, let's hope it stays. That totally breaks my heart that, you know, I'm going to just call it an act of God sabotaging the Skype line because of what we said earlier.
It's all my fault.
No, I was right there with you on the Satan thing, so.
Well, I'm not taking it back. I'm not.
All right. So where did we leave off with man ass?
I think we were ranking them.
I'm about to tweet out the poll so that at the end of the show we can see the people's choice. But we've got Patrick Swayze, Kurt Russell, Jon Bon Jovi.
Okay.
Those are all strong contenders.
Do we have a fourth to throw in there?
Hey, throw in Davy Jones.
No, don't throw Jones? Davy Jones. He's too little. That's not an ass.
Just like a nice little handful.
Ew.
like grabbing a grapefruit.
No.
I love that I got an honest response.
Well, it's in there now.
Oh, God.
All right. I mean, you got to include him since we're recording about
him. All right. Fair enough.
Okay. So let's get back to Davy Jones. Oh, so the monkeys. Crazy. TV show only lasted 2 seasons and then 1 movie. And then they stayed together till 1971 and then disbanded and just keep coming back for projects for every 10 or so years.
The TV show was great. The movie, not so much.
Yeah, they don't even know what that movie was about. I mean, that was just a train wreck.
Yeah, I never saw the movie. I didn't even know there was a movie until today.
Yeah, I looked it up after seeing that Behind the Music in its original run. And it's a weird watch. It's not great. And here's the sign of it. It's built to be like a movie that's sweet to watch while stoned. I watched it stoned, and it's not that great to watch while stoned.
Yeah, it doesn't enhance it any. I think I was more confused by it watching it stoned. It's all over the place.
Yeah. I mean,
and people dump on The Song Remains the Same, the Led Zeppelin movie. But that movie makes perfect sense when you're stoned.
I'd rather watch Kiss at an amusement park than that Monkees movie, which it's tragic.
Oh, God, yes. Kiss versus the Phantom of the Park? Yeah, where they've got the black guy filling in for Peter Criss. Just all of a sudden, there's a black guy in Kiss. You're like, what the fuck is going on here? It's so bizarre. Oh, man, and Paul Stanley's line delivery is remarkable. Star Child, I think the Phantom's over here. It's so bizarre. Those guys are not
like
meant
Scooby
to talk.
Have you seen,
or Snagglepuss.
Yeah, have you seen Decline of the Western Civilization? The second one is, so the first one's all about
years?
Punk rock bands.
Yeah.
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 Peter, Paul Stanley is trying so hard to be straight in that it's ridiculous. He does his interview while laying on a nude woman's ass, and then the effeminate quality of his voice, it feels like he is just trying so hard to make you think he's straight. He's like, well, you know, hard rock and roll is just about like being super manly. It's just about like, you know, you just put out your masculinity, and it's just raw and masculine and heavy. And he's just like, it's so bizarre, dude. Like, it's one of those ones where you just want to shake him and just be like, who are you? Like, are you really you? What's going on here? Like, Gene Simmons is clearly just like an overly masculine dickhead, right?
Yes, he is. Yes.
Paul Stanley is a completely different, confusing alien because he's a straight man. Doesn't sound like a straight man, but super wants you to believe he's a straight man.
But I interviewed
I'm a huge
Paul.
Fan. Did you?
You know, I spent a little bit of time with him. Yeah, him and Gene Simmons. And I think it really depends on his environment. You know, if he's comfortable, then he really does sound like just a natural guy.
You know, Juliet, I just want you to know that I'm a completely straight man, and as a straight man and a singer of a rock and roll supergroup called Kiss, I just want you to know that you're a beautiful woman, and I want to do sexy things to your tits.
Now, see, that's actually something Gene Simmons would say, because he's the one who put on the hardcore act. He was the one who's like over the top and like, you know, all right, I'm the guy, you know, I got the girls. That was his thing. I think Paul just kind of, you know, fell in the background.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Gene Simmons, I mean, he's been a loyal husband for a number of years, right?
Yes, he has. Well, yeah. I think they for a while had something of an agreement in their marriage. But yeah.
I don't even know how true that is. That feels like it might have been like part of the act. Like, hey, you know, Shannon, I love you to death and we've pledged our undying love to each other, but that's not super rock and roll. So if anybody asks you, can you just say that, you know, we've got an open thing or whatever so that I can continue to do my big tongue machismo act and make billions of dollars for us.
Oh, like, he got lots of groupies. Lots and lots of groupies. Oh, yes. Yes. I have personally seen it happen. He was quite good with them.
Wow. All right. Let's refocus. Let's talk about all monkeys music.
Bring it back around.
We do because I know you got to
focus. Never. This is Dave.
Well, I mean the music. I mean the monkeys music. I mean I would really hate to kind of overlook it because they were huge. They, at one point, they were bigger than the Beatles. There were times when you know they outsold the Beatles. I think one year where their albums outsold Beatles and Elvis combined or something like that.
It's really hard to judge the Monkees' early music only because, you know, like everybody knows, on the first, you know, couple of songs, they didn't play their instruments. You know, they didn't write their own songs. So I love the songs. I sometimes have a hard time considering the Monkees' songs, considering, you know, who they are now and what they became.
Yeah, but it's perfectly legitimate in music where they have session musicians and other writers. I mean, that's pretty true. Much music today.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah. So, I mean, they were just ahead of the game. And then these were actual artists who wanted to perform their stuff. And they had to fight with the studio, the TV studio who created the Monkees, which, by the way, for people who aren't familiar with the Monkees, they were assembled by a TV studio who wanted to make a TV show based on the popularity of the Beatles' Hard Day's Night. And so they put out a casting call, and those were the four people chosen to be the Monkees. They never knew each other before they started working together on the TV show.
I mean, they were the first manufactured boy band for all practical purposes.
Very good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sadly, that's what I was thinking about today while I was getting blasted with the Jonas Brothers and stuff. Just like, they were that. They were NSYNC or the Backstreet Boys, but before. They were casted for their looks. They're like, okay, we got Mickey, we got a pancake face. Let's get a guy with a hat. Let's get a cute little tiny elfish British dude. We're good. We're set. And then that developed to the 90s where it's like, we need a guy with a cane. Get a guy with a cane. Get a dude with a weird beard. Okay, get a blonde guy. We're good. I still think, because I grew up watching, there was back to back when I was a kid, it was the Monkees and then an episode of Batman 66.
Yeah.
And I still think it's hilarious to do the little thing from the opening where they run out with the tide and then run back in away from it. I'll do that when I go to the beach. Still. Yeah. Yeah. It's just burnt into my brain. That's just the thing you do when you go to the beach.
You know, it's one of those shows how I don't like camp. That's why I can't watch Star Trek or Batman. But that show, because it's played for comedy, I could watch it. It's a good show. It's fun. It's a fun watch. Which, by the way, also was what sparked their comeback in 86. Because yes. MTV played an all-day marathon of the Monkees, and it went over so huge with the people in, a little bit older than my generation, like they were able to bounce back from obscurity and basically they've been around ever since.
Which is fantastic. I mean, it's amazing that a TV show that, you know, was made in the 60s can have that same kind of impact again in the 80s.
I could argue that 60s TV is the best TV. You got the Twilight Zone, Star Trek. 60s TV is where it's at.
Yeah, well, it was a whole new landscape. You know?
Well, it was, yeah, and it was just so creative. People were more willing to be experimental and try things.
Also, it's you know, because TV today, it's just a lot of rehashing of, well, let's face it, 60s, 70s TV shows.
Exactly.
Because that's where the good stuff was. So they're just going back and mining the past.
Yeah, you know, all that storytelling, you know, that's what it was built off of.
Yeah.
So what if we did the Monkees, but they had to sell crystal meth to make it?
I just had a flashback of the new Monkees. Does that ring a bell with either of you?
Oh my God. I forgot about that.
That just hit me because I thought, wow, I wonder if they could pull it off today. Oh wait, they tried.
Oh, they tried. Yeah. Oh my God. I completely forgot that happened.
Me too. That was during the period when they were trying to bring back old TV shows, but modern takes on them. When they brought back stuff like What's Happening Now. And,
yes, they remade WKRP.
Oh, the new WKRP in Cincinnati. Right.
And that was awful.
That was terrible. I think it only had maybe two of the original cast members.
Oh, I know. And it had Tawny Kitaen in it, really, because she knows how to act.
She was great in that David Coverdale video. And don't you forget it.
I'm not saying she's not good eye candy. No, she's lovely.
That was good acting. She was on a car, but still sexy. That was a performance.
Yes, it was.
Did they give out awards for stripping?
Yes, I believe they're called the AVN Awards.
Well, that's for a little bit more than stripping. Like, I want an exotic dancing awards, like a classier AVN awards.
There has to be, considering that pole dancing now is considered exercise, and there are mommies who go and do pole dancing for class.
Yeah, there's got to be.
Dude, I want to be the Richard Simmons of pole dancing. I just found my calling in life.
I would fund it if that is what you want to do. I'm behind you. I will be your financial backer for the first Richard Simmons pole dancing class.
Oh my God, I want to be in that video.
I got a few Davy Jones fun facts that I looked up earlier today. Did you know that the character of Chekhov on Star Trek was added to the show because of the popularity of the monkeys?
No.
That's why Chekhov has that hair, because they wanted someone who looked like Davy Jones.
Yeah, and it's not a great haircut, and it was a weird choice to go with a Russian dude, but young Walter Koenig is a good facsimile for Davy Jones. That's not bad.
Let's see. Davy Jones was 5'4" tall and once was an apprentice to be a jockey.
I would have loved to have seen him ride a horse like that. That would have cracked me up.
Yeah. Apparently, he loved horses for the rest of his life. He had a stable at his house and continued to enjoy riding. Davy Jones once appeared in an episode of The Brady Bunch and then later reprised his role in the 1995 film The Brady Bunch movie.
Oh, I cracked up when I saw that. Like, and then you see all the teachers lining up in front of the stage when he does Girl, and nobody else knows what he's singing. It was hysterical. And then he's got like that Seattle band behind him, so they start kicking in, and then they just make the song sound like ass. It was, perfect.
And last I got, David Bowie was born David Jones, but changed his name because of Davy Jones.
Probably a good call. You know, there can only be one.
Yeah. And by the way, that was before Davy Jones was popular in the Monkees. Bowie changed his name to Bowie back when Davy Jones was performing on stage playing the Artful Dodger in Oliver, which he was nominated for a Tony.
That's right, he was.
Yeah.
And he did a lot of theater work after sort of the popular or the re-popularization of the Monkees. The Monkees never go away, dude. They're weirdly kind of like the Beatles now, where every time you think they're done, they come back with something phenomenal. Like even the 80s Monkees album, you're like, this is good stuff. It's good songwriting. It's great. And then now they're back again with this phenomenal new/old album.
This new album is outstanding. I love it. I have played it like 1,000 times. It sounds like summer. It's perfect.
If you're a fan of the sounds of the 60s, you gotta get it, because they took some old unreleased demos and stuff that they were working on back in the day. They went back and finished those. They got some old tracks. One included Davy Jones, and so he's on this album from an old track, and they also have a few new songs on there written by people like Noel Gallagher and Andy Partridge and Paul Weller. And
yeah, the guy from Weezer wrote one of the songs too.
Rivers Cuomo, yeah, he wrote a song too. Yeah, and also it was produced by the one of the guys from Fountains of Wayne, so it's got a good sensibility. It's a great album.
Yeah, what's amazing about it is just how true it sounds to the time that they were truly popular. You know, you listen to it now, and I mean, yeah, some of these are older songs, but they've been, you know, remastered, they've been, you know, bolstered, but it's still, it just sounds so perfect for the 60s. It sounds like the Monkees. It's not the Monkees trying to sound like, you know, 2016. It's just, it's them all the way.
Yeah, which is what I love about the album. They just embraced who they are. And I think it would have been a huge mistake if they tried to come out with a contemporary album.
Well, and that's kind of my problem with some of their albums that came out in the 80s and into the 90s, like Justice. It's not that it's bad. It just isn't true, I think, to who they are.
And plus, you know, if you do that, you kind of look like a sad old guys trying to be contemporary, as opposed to saying, hey, this is the 60s. This is where we grew up. We're bringing it back. Like, remember this, but it's all new.
Yeah, and it's the perfect spirit. It's ideal.
What else we got? Anybody got anything else on Davy Jones?
He was my hero as a kid. So I wrote him letters when I was like 6 years old. my mother had all of the Monkees albums, and I found an RCA, I think it was RCA, address on back one of them. So I used to write him all these letters, and I would give them to my dad to mail.
Yeah.
And I found out later, of course, that he never mailed them. Davy Jones never got my letters. And maybe that's why, you know, when he saw him, he didn't recognize me.
Well, if anything is to be learned from that Brady Bunch episode, he answers letters and he performs at proms.
See, my dad screwed me. I mean, he's just...
He got all of my dick pics, and I got hit with a restraining order. Believe me, you don't want any correspondence with that dude. He has no sense of humor.
All right, so Juliet, tell us a little bit about your show.
Well, The Unwritable Rant is a combination of storytelling and celebrity interviews. So I talk about my personal experiences, crazy, boozy misadventures that I have. And then every so often I get to talk to very, very cool people like Charlie Daniels or Ari Shaffir.
So the episode that aired where you tell the story about your mom and your dad, I mean, you sound like you grew up with the coolest parents. Your dad, he could do no wrong, that man. Just so solid.
Oh, yeah. You know, both my parents were super cool. I can't complain. But my dad, truly, you know, he's a physicist. You know, growing up with him, I learned so much. And I had all these crazy adventures because he would do anything. You know, he drove race cars. He did drag strip racing for a while. You know, he did professional fireworks displays. So my childhood was just a mass explosion of just, you know, cars and mayhem and, you know, all sorts of cool stuff.
And also your mom. Your mom is also from the same episode of the story you told.
You know, it's so funny. It's funny. If you go back and listen to, I was telling you earlier about that Crucifixion Bunny episode. Mm-hmm. My mother had a hand in that as well, because she always really just wanted me to think for myself and think as an individual. And, you know, if something went wrong, she was there for me. And she had a plan for me to, you know, make things right again. She's incredible that way. You know, yeah. Of course, she's also a closet serial killer, but that's fine.
That's, of scorpions.
I swear to God, she killed that thing. I know she did. She will never admit to it, but she did something to Bill.
What episode was that?
That would be episode 49.
Yeah, I think that's a great introductory episode just because it tells a little bit about your background growing up with an almost famous kind of youth.
Yeah, I mean, I was 16. I was going out, you know, and interviewing rock bands, and I was writing for a national magazine when I was 15 and 17.
Which is incredible. Do you have any stories from the road or anything?
Many, many. I got locked on Motley Crue's tour bus once. My dad was with me because he used to go when I was under 18. He used to go to all these shows with me because, you know, my parents aren't going to let me go and hang out with rock bands. You know, I was jailbait. It would have been bad. So he'd show up and pose as my photographer. You know, he had a camera, you know, and he'd just be like, all right, I'm here for the magazine. I'm going to, you know, shoot the thing. And he'd always just be in the background. So I'm on the bus. I'm interviewing Tommy Lee and Mick Mars, who actually is a fascinating guy. So it's about 2 hours before they go on, and they had this bus, and it was one of the older ones. The door couldn't open all the way, so we're trying to get off the bus. Couldn't. Nobody knew where anybody was. You know, there were no walkie-talkies anywhere. So Tommy Lee gets this baseball bat, and he starts pounding on the bus door with the bat. I mean, he is going to town on that thing and actually busted it off the door. I mean, just, and he's like, all right, you guys, you're free to go. And we're looking at him going, did you do that all on your own? That's insane. I mean, he was a madman.
That's so rock.
It was very rock and roll. Very rock and roll. Well, but, you know, it's like Almost Famous. You guys want to buy a gate? You know? Hell yeah.
And where can people...
Friend of the show, the lovely and talented and wonderful Juliet.
Oh, aren't you sweet?
Oh, sorry for interrupting. Everything went quiet when I said that. I was like, oh shit, maybe I shouldn't have talked. I'm just trying to pay you the
I was going to ask, where can they find you on Twitter, or what's the best way to get a hold of your show?
Well, if you go to theunwritablerant.com, you'll find everything. You'll find my links to Twitter, to Facebook. You'll find my iTunes link. Everything you need, all right there.
This week for Dave of the Week, we're not doing a Dave off because we have a very special Dave of the Week. We're going with Dave the producer, which is Juliet Miranda's producer for The Unwritable Rant. And you could follow him over at Behind the Rant. Follow him on Twitter at Behind the Rant. So if you would like to follow us on Twitter, you can follow Octopus Caveman at Octopus Caveman. You can follow me at Green Korean One. And our website is davepodcast.com. And if you feel like you need to email us with complaints after this episode about Satan, you can email us dave at davepodcast.com.
So I have the results to our best man ass poll as of a couple hours of posting it.
Yeah.
And? Best man ass? 82% Patrick Swayze.
Can't go wrong with that, then.
This show is not.
People love the Swayze.
Swayze's the man.
The best hair and Swayze. The best ass.
He's won best hair and best ass. Maybe next I gotta do best ass hair. Kurt Russell got a couple of votes. John Bon Jovi got a couple of votes. They're tied up with 9% apiece. But Patrick Swayze with 82%, Davy Jones with 0%. Juliet was right. The ladies don't like the Davy Jones ass.
Exactly.
Wow, not one person.
No.
I should have gone on there and given him a pity vote.
Swayze, man. It's all about the Swayze ass and the Swayze hair.
You're right. We lost the wrong Swayze. Okay. Juliet, thank you so much for joining us.
You are welcome. I've had a blast.
So for the Dave Podcast, I'm the Green Korean.
I'm Octopus Caveman.
Like sand through the hourglass, so are the Daves of our lives.
We are the Daves he knows, he knows. We are the Daves he knows.
These are the Daves I know, I know.
We are the Daves he knows.
Now these are the Daves.